WAER Sports proudly presents the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
At the 30, at the 20, cuts towards the middle, and Nykeem Johnson takes it home for a Syracuse touchdown.
Orange going quick. Bounce pass, Jimmy Boeheim, baseline drive, and jam!
Going through all the good.
To the midline, it's bobbled, and Syracuse wins!
A winding shot by Trimboli, 10 yards out, shoots, he scores!
And all the bad.
Syracuse, bowl ineligible for the third straight year.
They made it into the NCAA tournament as a number 11 seed, but it is over as Houston moves on to the Elite Eight.
And now, here are your hosts, Johnny Gadamowitz and Ethan Frank.
Welcome on into another edition of the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. As always, Johnny Gadamowitz and Ethan Frank with you today. We're joined by a very special guest and a friend of the podcast, Brent Axe. Brent, how's it going today? Thanks for coming on.
Gentlemen, how are we? Doing great. We might have another guest, by the way. Blaze the dog is right over here to my right. He's currently chewing on a bone. I don't know if you guys can hear that or not. But we
can't hear it, but we would certainly welcome him if he...
He might be joining here.
All right.
He loves Zoom calls. I start talking on these things. He comes over. He wants to know what's happening. So we'll see if he wants to join us or not.
Awesome. Well, we would welcome him with open arms, should that be the case. As far as the Syracuse basketball team is concerned here, Brent, you know, an interesting week, a narrow win on the road at Notre Dame and a huge win in the ACC opener. And then the Cuse really steamroll Oakland, put up their highest point total on the season on Tuesday night in a 95-66 win. Here we are now, you know, sort of 9 games in, 5-4, a couple of bad losses, but a couple of intriguing wins as well. Where are you at? What's your vibe on this team right now, 9 games in?
I don't take anything for granted with this team, to be honest with you. If anything, that win over Oakland, you know, I was saying it a bit on my radio show, like sometimes, you know, my daughter does this all the time. She'll come home from school and I'm like, how was school? Fine. What'd you guys do at school? Nothing, right? And sometimes that's all it is, right? Like, I have a pretty interesting job. I think I always have stories to tell, but sometimes you just come home from work, you're like, nah, nothing happened today. That was that Oakland win. That's exactly what it should have been. Just a routine day at the office, beat a bad team. It was interesting for a few minutes there. And then, you know, Syracuse went on that 18-0 run and put that away. So they did what they had to do there. My concern is they only have one legitimate three-point shooter. So when you play good teams that can defend Joe Girard, what do you do, right? I mean, Jesse Edwards can have these huge nights where he's just pouring in double-doubles. He's, you know, what is he, fourth in the country in rebounding right now. He's one of the top shot blockers in the country. His offensive game is off the charts. But he can only do so much, right? And you need all these other freshmen to kind of step up and progress at a rate that's quicker than freshmen need to grow up. I love Judah Mintz and the swagger he shows, and he's always willing to take that last shot, but there's a lot he's still learning. Last night is a good example, even at a routine day at the office. How many defenses did Oakland throw at Judah Mintz, right? And it's his job to identify the defense, and it's a freshman point guard trying to figure this stuff out. So I hate to say I don't know after 9 games, but I don't take anything for granted with this team. They don't have a significant non-conference win of note. That's going to hurt. It puts a lot of pressure on ACC play for this team to beat the teams they need to beat. But at the very least, you know, they're above 500 again. And, you know, the fans have settled down a little bit. But, you know, they're looming and ready to strike again when this team struggles.
I would say looming is a nice way to describe it. Like, you look at the KenPom numbers. I would say I'm almost addicted to looking at them at this point, but this is a team ranked in the 80s, offense in the 80s in offensive efficiency, defensive efficiency in the 80s. It's just like, it's not like last year's team that was a top 20 offense and then defense in the high hundreds. It's, you know, everything is pretty mediocre around the board. So if there was one thing that you think can improve about this team going forward to maybe have an offense that takes the next step or a defense that takes the next step, what do you think that would be?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, because like last year, they were off the charts three-point shooting. My concern with this team, but they couldn't play defense, right? So you're robbing Peter to pay Paul at this point. What I think can get better is maybe Justin Taylor gets a little more run and can provide a second three-point shooter. Judah Mintz starts making some of those threes, right? Offensive flow. I mean, Oakland's Oakland, but the ball movement was much better in that game. That's been an issue with this team at times. And, you know, if they can get better at that and utilize that, I think the big thing that's got to get better, though, for this team is just finding someone beyond Joe and Jesse that are consistent scorers, right? Judah does it sometimes. You get spot duty from other guys here and there. I mean, Chris Bell has got a rebound. How can that kid be 9 games in and have 9 rebounds? You know, then as we speak, the next offensive rebound he grabs will be his first, right? But at the same time, I don't want to put too heavy a burden on this team, Ethan, because there is a lot of freshmen. There's a lot of young contributors on this team that are learning on the job here. But, you know, got 6 in a row at home, starting with that Oakland game, to figure out those things. So what Syracuse has to be really good at are the things you can't teach. You know, going after rebounds, loose balls, great passing. How good has John Bolajac been passing the ball off the bench in these recent games? You know, you've got to hustle. You've got to just, if anything, just play your ass off, and the rest of this stuff will kind of fill in. But, you know, what can get better at this? At this rate, it's offensive flow and someone else stepping up as a consistent game in, game out offensive contributor. I don't know about defense. I mean, that's a lot to put on this team. Zone, man, they've obviously gone back to zone, I should say. That man-to-man thing seemed to be a bit of an experiment that Jim Boeheim pulled the ripcord on already. I think this is a better defensive team than it was last year in some ways, but in others, you know, you kind of have to wonder how – no matter what lineup you put out there, there's somebody that's doing something for the first time, right? And it's hard to compete at the top level of the ACC when you're doing that.
All right, so let's take the flip side of that then. I mean, Ethan asked about the things that need some work. How about the things that have impressed you, whether it be, you know, something that you expected to kind of stand out? And I know you mentioned a couple of things there that mm-hmm. that have been solid so far, but what are some of the more overarching positive takeaways as far as things that this team has done right so far at this point in the year?
I mean, you got to start with Jesse Edwards, and we were starting to see it at the end of last year. He gets hurt. You know, maybe if he's healthy, I don't think that team makes the tournament, but maybe in the conversation for it a little bit more. I mean, he's just playing the game now, right? I think in his first couple of years, you saw a guy that was learning on the job and trying to figure out where to be. He knows where to be. He knows how to shoot. He's great around the basket. His rebounding is terrific. His defense has gotten much better. He's a great shot blocker. Like, he's just in the flow now, right? I mentioned John Bolajac. I mean, you need that X factor. You need that bench guy that can come in and kind of give you a lift. And he's been great. His defensive prowess has really improved against Notre Dame. You know, he closed out on Dane Goodwin for Notre Dame, was in the corner over there, hadn't missed a three before that. I think he altered that shot just enough so it wasn't a factor. We mentioned he's a great passer, and he just needs somebody that knows what they're doing in the zone, and he's getting there. Judah Mintz has just been so fun to watch, and he is that intangible I brought up, guys, right? No matter what, he wants the ball. No matter what, he's going to take it to the hole, or he's going to take a shot, or he's just – the confidence level on that kid doesn't wane. Like, if you were playing a video game with Judah Mintz, like, that green bar is always full. It never goes down. All the time. And I love that intangible about him. He's just got to learn what do you say about freshmen? They don't know what they don't know. And that's him at this point. But he is such, you know, I know you guys like to say this a lot on the internets now. He's got that dog in him, right? I like that. I like that in a player. You got to have some swagger. And I really appreciate that about him. So those are some of the things I like. I've been encouraged with what I see from Justin Taylor in spots. I've been encouraged by, you know, a couple other things that I think the freshmen can contribute here and there. I like Malik Brown. I know there's always somebody that kind of falls out of favor with Boeheim or has to earn Boeheim's trust a little bit more. He said after the Oakland game that maybe Malik Brown gets a little bit more of a role. It depends on the situation. And I think he's right, because John Bull is more of a facilitator than Malik Brown is at this point. Look, as much as I got on Chris Bell for his lack of rebounding, that dunk he had the other night was spectacular. And he's developing as an offensive player, right? So there are things I like about this team. It's just, you know, there's the things I don't like are going to get in their way more, I think.
Agreed on that. Going back to John Bull, I think you tweeted it, if not I'm mistaken, but I also had the same thought that John Bull feels like a little bit of like a knockoff Marek version, like with the things he does well. I saw that circulating around on the Twitter sphere last night. I don't know how you'd feel about that comparison.
I think that's an apt comparison in a way. I mean, by the time Marek was done, he was a polished offensive player, ran a lot of backdoor cuts, could get to the hoop. It's funny that after the Notre Dame game, Jim Boeheim was saying, "Where's Marek Doljai when you need him?" And I'm like, Marek wasn't that good of a rebound, right? But he played his ass off. You know, he had those intangibles that we talked about, right? So I think that's what Jim was referring to there. I think it's an apt comparison because John Bull, you know, that I know it's Oakland, but he did a little bit of everything. He plays 8 minutes. He grabs 6 rebounds. He's passing the ball. He lit that fuse on the 18-0 run that Syracuse went on at the end of that game. He's diving for loose balls, playing better on defense. That's that X factor guy, right? Typically what we mean when we say that is they can't shoot or they're not a good offensive player, but they do everything else. And right around the basket, they're good. And, you know, I didn't bring up Benny Williams earlier. I know I skipped over somebody. He's just been too inconsistent at this point for me to like say, oh, look at Benny. He's the guy they need him to be. I mean, this is the player we all wanted on the court last year. And I just haven't seen enough consistency from him to really anoint anything, but he has shown flashes this year that he's better around the basket. He's more confident offensively. He can get a little more away from the hoop, but I mean, just go down his box score, you know, he'll have 9 points and 6 rebounds. Then he'll have like 2 points and no rebounds. He'll play 40 minutes. He'll play 25 minutes. So they need that forward position overall to come through. And right now, you know, John Bull's been probably the best big man, not named Jesse Edwards, on this team.
Obviously a very interesting makeup roster construction wise, just due to the nature of a really heavy freshman class. What do you make of how Jim Boeheim has sort of utilized, you know, the weapons that he has had thus far? I mean, I think maybe the bigger conversation right now surrounding, you know, Chris Bell, Justin Taylor. Bell has had the short leash. Taylor's been making the most of his minutes. And there have certainly been some cries for maybe giving Taylor a knock in the starting lineup. What's your sort of mindset right now as far as how the distribution has gone and what it could look like a little bit going forward?
I think what you said about Justin Taylor is spot on. If Chris Bell keeps this up, I don't know how. Now, remember, Jim Boeheim's starting lineup is completely overrated, right? It's not who starts. It's who finishes, who's in the game when it matters. So I think Justin Taylor can fight his way into that role. I don't think you're going to see Justin Taylor's name up on the board and announced by the PA announcer before games as a starter, if you will. But he could start playing starters minutes because he makes the most of those minutes. And I think you can have Jude at the one, Justin at the two. You can have Joe at the one, Justin at the two. Like there's better combinations there. Justin can slide down to the three if you need him to at this point. So I just like his versatility there. And that's what Jim likes. You know, give me something I can put you on the court for, like we were saying with John Bull. And if Chris Bell just continues to be a one-dimensional player like this, you got to use him, but maybe not in the role he's in now. As far as the other freshmen go, I mean, Judah has been handed the keys and he's going to have them the rest of the way because, you know, Saimir is obviously somebody that can come in and run the point and can compliment you. And he had a great game against Oakland, took advantage of those minutes. So I think that's why you can give Judah that much trust, because if he gets off the rails a little bit, Saimir can calm things down at that position. Going through the other guys, I mean, we mentioned what Malik Brown is. Kodir Copeland is kind of, I think we've seen what he's going to be. It's going to be a reserve role. I don't think Jim trusts him enough on everything to put him out there. He plays hard when he's out there. I don't think that's his issue. I just think he's, you know, learning his way through things. There's so many damn freshmen on this team. Who did I forget? Right. I know I forgot somebody.
I don't think you forgot anyone.
Did I hit them all? Did I hit all the boxes?
Are we mentioning Peter Carey?
Peter Carey. Yeah, I think he didn't play in that game the other night. I think we're heading for a red shirt here. Right. That's what it seems to be.
That is definitely a possibility. Sticking with Jim, I can't help but just the question is always on my mind of how long is Jim going to be here? And you look at the future, what this program is set up for the future. You have three seniors, and I guess John Bolajak is a redshirt junior at this point, but this is his fourth year in the program. Saimir, Joe, Jesse, and John Bol. And there is no one committed to this program beyond this season. No future recruit. And I don't know if it was on your show or if it was on someone else's show, but Jim Boeheim went on ESPN Syracuse and talked about, you know, why weren't you more active in the portal? Because everyone else was paying everyone money. We didn't do that. What do you expect from Jim? I have said a couple times that I think it is more likely than not that this might be his final year based on not having any future players committed to the program. And, you know, I think, you know, sending Jerry and Hakeem's jerseys into the rafters in his last home game on the 20-year anniversary of the national championship would be a very nice send-off. But do you see it that way, or do you see this going a different way?
Well, you got to remember, he put the red flag up himself. He called my show in March before the season was even over. Now, remember, the John Shire Krzyzewski stuff was going on, and that had a lot of people asking this question. But out of nowhere, Jim Boeheim's like, we have a plan. There is a succession plan in place. Now, he wouldn't say what it is or who it is. And I just talked to John Wildhack last week, and he wouldn't tell me what it is, which I find interesting. Like, if it's just Jerry or Red, just tell us who it is. Like, Duke just went through an entire season, and the whole world knew that John Shire was taking over. If anything, I think it helps you. Now, Syracuse went through this once with the Mike Hopkins succession plan. That was kind of a different circumstance. But I think you got to let people know. Right. You got to let people know. On another note, like, you got to let people know what's going on with your football coach, too. Your two major front facing programs, maybe behind the scenes, you know, but I think you've got to send a message out there, like what you're doing with these coaches. I mean, I think I'm getting off topic here, but I asked John this the other day. I said, why is Jim Boeheim still the best coach for Syracuse basketball? Right. And you can go back and watch the interview and get his full answer to this, but it was basically his track record. What you brought up, Ethan, I think is the more interesting thing. I'm not concerned about what's in the rearview mirror. Everybody knows that. Why is he the best coach going forward, right? Why is he still the best coach for recruiting? He brought it up himself, right? They wanted to go in the transfer portal and couldn't because they couldn't pay anybody. Well, that's a problem, right? If that's the game you got to play right now. If they have another losing season, you're going to have a real hard time convincing people based on his track record that he's the best guy going forward. Like, how long you got to keep kissing the ring is the question here. Like, there's only so much what you did before gets you. You have to convince everybody why he's still the best guy going forward, right? So that's a major score in recruiting. That's, you know, something that answers this question that I don't have. But right now we don't have the answer to that. So I think it's likely it could be his swan song. I don't think he wants to go out with another losing season or anything, but, you know, Jim is the most competitive person I know. So the thing is, Jim is always going to think he's the answer to the question. When does it become apparent he's not, right? When does somebody answer the question, whether it's Jim, John Wildhack, or whoever, you know, pulls the trigger on this, answers the question, you know, why are you still the best person for this job? And track record's not the answer. I mean, going forward, not what's back there.
A very interesting sort of macro overview, I guess you could say. As far as the immediate future is concerned, Brent, it's a big week this week because it's Georgetown week. A circle it on your calendar game for sure, despite maybe not having some of the same juice that it, of course, once did. As far as this Hoyas program is concerned, Just a terrible year in every sense of the word for Patrick Ewing's squad a year ago. From a Syracuse perspective, in your eyes, what has sort of, and again, not just talking about last year, but more kind of big picture, mm-hmm. what sort of led to the stumble of this Georgetown program, and why have they sort of taken a turn for the worse as far as dipping down to not what they once were back in the old days, so to speak?
I'm really surprised it's happened because I think Patrick Ewing had every opportunity to be a great coach. I mean, look at the Big East. The Big East is still a great basketball league. It's weird to see some of those names in there, you know, coming from what I know the Big East to be, but there's some good teams in that league. So you would think it of all, you know, John Thompson and the JT3 and some of the good coaches they've had. I thought Patrick Ewing would come in and at the very least attract some of that talent back to Georgetown that needs to be there. That hasn't been the case. They just lost to recently American for the first time since 1982. Like, that's their Colgate, right? They had not lost to that team since 1982 and it happened. And there's a lot of first time since, much like here at Syracuse, that's happening. So if their fans are saying Patrick Ewing's not the answer, right? I'm seeing tweets from prominent Georgetown bloggers and people that know the program saying, you know, Rick Pitino and things of that nature. So they're kind of fed up with Patrick Ewing and don't think they can turn it around. I'm surprised it didn't work. I thought that was the best solution you could have. I mean, there was so much talk about Patrick Ewing should have been an NBA head coach, right? It was just an assistant next in waiting, ready to go. But you find out it's just much more than name brand nostalgia, come play for me as a name. Like, you got to get out there and convince the best players in the country that Georgetown's still the place, that Georgetown's still cool, right? We're the Allen Iversons of the world and the guys that just kept that line of succession going. But they beat Syracuse last year, and the last four games have been a split. The last eight games between these two have been decided by less than 10 points. So no matter how you feel about the rivalry and whether it should continue or not, when these two get on the court, they play a great game. That's what I know. We could tell ghost stories all day about, you know, Patrick Ewing and Pearl Washington and Derek Coleman and Billy Owens and Iverson and Dikembe Mutombo and, you know, go through all the names. My favorite name of all time, Ruben Boumshe. Shout out to him from Georgetown, right? We can tell those stories all day. When Syracuse and Georgetown play now, they're still great games. So, look, I might be dying on the hill here alone, but I think Syracuse and Georgetown should play, you know, forever. But, you know, at some point, maybe the gas is going to run out on this thing.
It's definitely possible. I guess that's what happens when you hire, you know, the best player in program history. Look what happened with Chris Mullin at St. John's. I mean, look what's going on at Louisville right now. It is it's not pretty when it goes sour, because you don't want to have to fire the greatest player in the history of the program, because this is someone the fans love so much. But you talk about memories. I want to ask you, what is your favorite Georgetown Syracuse memory that either you went to in person, that you watched on TV? What would you say is the one that comes to mind first?
My personal favorite was Syracuse Georgetown in, I want to say, 1989. And you walk in the building, and I shouldn't be happy about this because Team USA lost, but I just remember this like it was yesterday. There's a giant sign in the dome. I think somebody made it from a sheet, and they hung it from the upper deck, and it said, "Where's the gold, John?" Because John Thompson lost the Olympics in 1988, right? And I just remember like looking at that, and just, I shouldn't laugh at that because it's Team USA, but I just like, yeah, you screwed that up, buddy, right? But those games, that run there from like 87 to 93, we're talking about the Billy Owens free throws, John Thompson getting thrown out, you know, three technicals in the first half. That was, for years, it was always like the last game of the year, and Jim Nance and Billy Packer would call the game. It was always on CBS, and it was just an event. It felt like such an event, kind of what Syracuse Duke is now. But, you know, obviously the rivalry was brimming. They'd play two or three times a year. Jim Boeheim, you know, coming into the postgame press conference at the Big East tournament. You know, Michael Graham punched my player and, you know, throws the chair and gets out of there. And he should have been that pissed, because that was a trash call. Michael Graham did punch a player. Nothing happened. Just to show you what happened back in my day, boys. They'd punch each other and nobody to get thrown out of that game, right? It's hard to pick one, but I would probably have to say the Billy Owens free throws and that game and Thompson getting thrown out and the whole thing. I mean, Patrick Ewing and Pearl Washington, you know, I don't know if you guys have seen the video of that, but if Patrick Ewing had landed that punch on Pearl Washington, oh, good Lord, that would not have ended well. But, you know, they were taking swings at each other, like we were saying a minute ago. It's like, yeah, that, whatever, blow the whistle, let's go. That's Syracuse and Georgetown, right? So we're missing some of that for sure, but there's a lifetime of memories. Jerry McNamara, you know, I can't remember who the play-by-play guy was who said it, but, you know, G-Mac drops one on Georgetown. That was a great call, buzzer beater there. I'm going to forget 100 here, but the ones, you know, are my favorites. I don't have like a secret Syracuse Georgetown favorite. It's what everybody else, you know, really enjoyed.
And couldn't be more perfect that Syracuse inducting Pearl Washington and Jim Boeheim into the Ring of Honor on Saturday, even though their names have been up there for what, 2 years at this point. finally getting that induction. I'm sure the fans will have something to cheer about there. A couple more things before we close it out, unrelated to Syracuse, Georgetown. I have to get to the bottom of this story because the other week I was doing a project over at Newhouse, and I was up in Liverpool, and I was on the Onondaga Lake Parkway, and and I was the map told me to get off the parkway, and he was like, "Oh, this is by that bridge that Brent always tweets about. I have to go under this bridge see what he's talking about." So I went under the bridge, and I was like, "You know what? Everything that he's tweeted about makes perfect sense now," because I have a similar highway, like a two lanes on each side highway back in near my hometown. And every time it's a compact car only highway, there are no trucks allowed on it. Every time there's a truck on it, my mom loses her mind and gets very upset. So where do the origin of you tweeting every time a truck loses to the Onondaga Lake Parkway bridge originate from?
God, I can't even remember. I can't even take credit for calling him the undefeated heavyweight champion of the world. Somebody else coined that. But here's the thing. Technology is supposed to make our lives better. It's supposed to improve everything. The rate of trucks hitting that bridge has increased. I don't even have the percentage in front of me, but I know it's increased substantially since everybody got the GPS on their phone. And they just go where the GPS tells them to go. And I think they've even rerouted some of these things so they don't go there. But you just have to be the biggest moron on the planet. Okay. And I come from a trucking family, guys. My father owned a trucking company. Okay. My grandfather owned a trucking company, same company, Axon Arthur Motor Express. Shout out. So coming from a trucking family and knowing what you have to know driving a truck, and there are so many warning signs before you get there. Right? Short of, "Hey, idiot, turn around or you're going to hit this bridge." And they still do it. And it's this old iron bridge that's been there forever that, you know, I don't know why they built it that low, but they did. And, you know, they can't lower, like the solution would be, they actually did this with another bridge in Syracuse on West Genesee Street. The solution is you dig under, right, and make it more of a dip. You can't do that there because the lake's right there, so it would flood, right? So you're just kind of stuck with this thing unless, you know, CSX, the rail company that owns it, wants to spend millions of dollars to build a new bridge, which we know that's not going to happen. So just the fact that so many people continue to hit this thing and the bridge just takes a licking and keeps on ticking, I just get such amusement out of this. And you got to be careful because there actually was one recently where a guy got, you know, he had to go to the hospital. Right. But most of the time it's just some idiot that forgets about the bridge and hits it. And, you know, there's always that picture of them standing on the side of the road, like, "Oh my God, what did I just do?" Right. So it's just one of those fun things that's so unique to Central New York that you send out the bat signal. I think a lot of people follow me on Twitter just to know what's going on here in Syracuse, not just with the sports teams. And they just, you feel that local connection that only Central New Yorkers can feel no matter where they are. And it's just one of those things you get a laugh about. And you know, you just said it a minute ago, Ethan, like, "I got to see this thing. What is it about this bridge?" And then you see it, you're like, "Okay, I get it." Right. I get it. Why these idiots keep hitting this thing.
It was definitely worth going to see. And everything you're saying makes a lot of sense. I every time it comes up on my Twitter feed, it gives me a good chuckle every single time. One more thing before we close out.
Not to mention, guys, Hyde's is like a block away from there. So if you're on that part of town, like, you got to get in and get a hot dog at Hyde's. A mixed double as I get at Hyde's.
It's on the list now. I'll keep that in mind. One more thing. Today is also a very special podcast because it's a birthday pod. It's Johnny's birthday.
It is. I knew we weren't going to make it through without you bringing it up, Ethan.
What? I had to. It's a birthday pod.
Yes, I appreciate the birthday wishes. 22. I'm in my Taylor Swift era. That's what they're saying.
22. Syracuse, right. Lacrosse.
Yes.
22.
Yep.
Right.
Yes. But hey, speaking of that Onondaga Lake Parkway, what's the going rate as far as how often? I feel like it's got to be once a week. Right? Is it, well, maybe once every 2 weeks, once a week? I feel like the rate at which these are happening, it's just occurring more and more frequently.
Definitely, it's at least once or twice a month now.
Yeah.
Right? It's been very consistent as of late. It's to the point now where I'm getting scoops on it. Like, I'm getting text messages from people that are driving by and saw it happen, or, you know, DM me on Twitter, like, oh, I just drove by the bridge. It happened. You got to tweet it. Right. So I don't know, man. That's going to be my legacy. I've, you know, done all these things in this world. You know, I was the commencement speaker at my high school back in the day and kind of carved out a somewhat successful career as a columnist and a radio host. And, you know, I'm raising a daughter and, you know, done a lot of things in life, but, you know, here lies Brent Dax, free throws matter. And he talked about that bridge a lot. That's going to be my legacy.
Crazy stuff. Crazy stuff. Very exciting stuff as well. That's Brent Axe of Syracuse.com and ESPN Radio Syracuse. Brent, thanks so much for coming on today. Really appreciate it.
Happy birthday, Johnny. Thanks
Thank
for
you.
Me
I
on.
Appreciate Ethan. That.
Thanks for having me on, boys.
Of course. It's Syracuse and Georgetown. And as always, WAER has you covered. It's a 1 p.m. tip. So McClurg team countdown to tip off gets going this Saturday at 12:30, only on 88.3 FM. That's going to do it for this edition of the Ostrom Avenue podcast alongside Ethan Frank and always and our guest Brent Axe. I'm Johnny Gadamowitz saying so long. Enjoy the week and we'll chat next week.